Good evening. This is TNT Radio, brought to you by Blog and Broadcasting Service. And I'm Nevin Campanella, your net reporter. As usual, I'm talking to you with a nice gravelly voice, but I'm going to speak a little bit lower tonight. Don assures me that he can up the volume on his end. If I speak a little softer and slower, I won't lose my voice. At least that's the theory. TNT Radio, March 23rd, 2006. Hey folks, did you ever wonder what it looked like in a net radio studio? I was always curious. I mean, I really didn't have any concept of what does it take to actually produce a radio show. So, I'm going to give you kind of a description. We're in a room about the size of, I would say, a very large living room with an absolutely gorgeous view through a double glass door overlooking a canyon. It is extremely beautiful. To my left is Don Newsom's desk. You'd have to picture a sort of wraparound type desk. It has two computers on it, two mixers, a couple of other very strange looking devices with wires hanging off. And over the front of the desk, all the wires land in a puddle on the floor in front of them. Behind me, on my right side, is Douglas Newsom, who is pretty much operating the financial system for the entire project. What is amazing to me about the whole broadcast concept is that compared to AM stations, and I know you've seen that on television, you know, the inside of a studio, what it looks like, you know, all those dials and buttons, so on and so forth. This is actually quite trim. There's really very little equipment. Basically, what it comes down to is the phone system, the mixer, and the computer. And those mixers are doing the job. They really are. I don't know anything about it. Don has been training me for the past 2 or 3 days on trying to learn how to put people on the air. Well, it seems like I've learned how to drop them off the air quite a bit, but I'm learning. It's probably easier for a younger person. It takes us older ones a little bit more time, especially if we're a little bit slow, but I'm getting there. Okay, where are we at with TNT Radio? Gosh, folks, you know, there's so much going on in my life, I almost don't know where to start. One of the things that's happened is I'm going through some decision-making in terms of how to deal with TNT Radio. There's no question in my mind that the blog and posting notes and documentation is extremely important. I mean, it really is. We probably are the only broadcasting system doing news that actually publishes the notes from the news report. I haven't seen it anywhere else on the net, so I think we're quite unique. Now, why doesn't anyone else do it? Because it's a pain in the butt. It's that simple. It takes a lot to put this together. It takes about 1.5 hours to put together a decent news broadcast. Yeah, I can sit here and chat for an hour. I mean, I can BS until the cows come home, but eventually you do want to hear some news. And so you have to go through, and you have to pull it out. And it's not very easy, because there's a lot to look at. But in terms of publishing notes, our primary place right now is tntradio.blogspot.com. However, this will eventually be replaced. And it's being worked on right now. A new blog will occur. The old blog will have a link to the new one. Let me fix my notes here, folks. I'm trying to figure out where I'm at. Well, what's going on today? Today is March the 23rd. Historically, where does that bring us? In 1839. Now listen, folks, well, I'm about to tell you something I've always wondered about. Listen to this. Okay. Did you hear that? Okay. Where does that come from? Is that a word? O and K? Okay. Where does it come from? I never knew. But in 1839, it was published in the Boston Morning Post as an abbreviation for OLL space KORRECT. All correct. In other words, if we put that into modern English, it would be all correct. OK comes exactly from that. The old English for spelling all is O-L-L and not A-L-L. Interesting, isn't it? I love this word derivation. I'm fascinated by it, you know, where idioms come from in words. March 23rd in 1889, there was a land run. Yep. You've seen it on television, you've seen pictures, you've seen movies. The Oklahoma land run. Benjamin Harrison opened Oklahoma to white settlement starting on April 22nd. 1903, the Wright brothers apply for a patent on their invention of one of the first successful airplanes after much hard work. That was on March 23rd, 1903. You know, the Wright brothers, let's talk about them for a minute. They made news in 1903 on March the 23rd. But they did something more than make news, folks. They had a dream. They thought. They dreamt. The dream became reality. And their reality, the reality of two brothers working side by side with a dream, became the reality for the entire planet. Think about it. It all comes from two brothers and a dream. Isn't that amazing? 1956. March 23rd, Pakistan becomes the first Islamic republic in the world. That's a rather short note, because what actually happened is that that country was separate. This is not my notes. That country was actually carved out of India. And there was a lot of bloodshed before that happened. It wasn't as easy as my notes sounded. It didn't just become the first Islamic Republic. I mean, there was a lot of grief. And in 1989, on March 23rd, and I remember this entire experience, Stanley Pons and Martin Fleischer, remember those names, folks, announced cold fusion at the University of Utah. Now, for those of you who are familiar with my background, I was working at Utah State University at the time, and I knew a number of people who were familiar with Pons and Fleischmann. To this very day, there's a belief that Pons and Fleischmann were hassled, were just simply hassled. And a lot of people were tossed into that whole pot of cold fusion concept and denounced their work. Personally, what do I believe? I believe there was a conspiracy. I truly do. Why? Well, first of all, Stanley Pons and Martin Fleischmann would not just come out and announce cold fusion unless they actually had some hard, cold evidence. It's that simple, folks. These are professional scientists. They don't just flap their lips. They don't do that. Something happened on March the 23rd in 1989 that stopped cold fusion cold. My belief is that there are some very powerful people on this planet that did not want to see that happen. Well, why wouldn't they want to see cold fusion happen? Well, what does that actually mean, cold fusion? Well, in a sense, it's kind of like the opposite of nuclear activity, nuclear fission. Cold fusion is a process in which you actually get more energy than what you put in. Now, as impossible as that sounds, that's exactly what that was all about. And I believe that Pons and Fleischmann were hassled, and Prague government has something to do with it. Hey, who was born on March the 23rd? Joan Crawford in 1905. What an amazing actress. Absolutely amazing. Now, some people didn't like her. They thought her very, brusque, hard-nosed. I know that after her movie acting career, she did do some rather amazing television material. Oh, you remember those kind of long soap opera type things. I didn't particularly appreciate that kind of performance, but she was a wonderful actress. And deaths. In 1964, on March 23rd, absolutely, absolutely fantastic actor, Peter Lorre, died in 1964. He was born, by the way, in 1904. I was always fascinated by Peter Lorre. He was born in Hungary, by the way. I guess it was his demeanor, his Hungarian accent. He just was one cool actor. I loved him, absolutely loved him in Casablanca. Remember Peter Lorre in Casablanca? He also played another role, which you may not know about. And if you haven't seen the movie, please go see it. It's called Arsenic and Old Lace. What a role he played in there. Absolutely fascinating. Anyway, what I'm going to do tonight is I'm going to read to you an email I received. Now, this email I received in reaction to last night's broadcast. The person that wrote to me had a different opinion than I do. They firmly believed that the American public was not apathetic, and like I do believe they are. But let me read the person's letter to you, and in her own words. Now, I'm going to have to go slow. This is rather a long email, and this person took a lot of time to put this together, and I really appreciate it. Yes, it's a different opinion than mine. I know she doesn't appreciate my opinion very much, but this lady deserves a lot of credit for taking action. She did, and she's certainly not apathetic. Hello, Dr. Nevin. This is the first time I have listened to internet radio station BBS Radio. I heard the last of your show and end comments. You were making political commentary about the people and their apathy and blaming us, the people. I would like to enlighten you, if I may, about this particular point of view or way of viewing that you have shared with your audience. I would ask you to consider something I am sure you have studied in your classes. This is the classic abuser-victim syndrome. I'm sure you're versed in its method of operation. As a first-hand experiencer of the abuser syndrome, and not a vicarious learner of the subject, I will tell you that the people of this country have been sorely abused. Some have been abused from early childhood. Some get abused through marriage. And some get abused from work. Some through religion. And there are many more ways, including the financial structure of this society. most everybody gets a chance of being abused in this so-called free society. All too common symptom of an abuser is to always blame the victim. It is the victim's fault for pushing the wrong buttons. It is the victim's fault for not doing something right. It is the victim's fault for causing the situation, and on to ad nauseum. We must always remember that the abuser abuses because he or she is the abuser. There is no other reason. The victim can enable the abuser, but too often stopping the codependency is impossible, for both abuser and victim are victims. If you would take this whole big country and see it as an instrument of abuse directed by the elite, the greedy, the criminal insane, whatever, you would recognize that you are falling into their programming by blaming the people who have been, since the beginning of recorded history, the victim. Abused people act a certain way. Who wants to sign a petition and get a tax audit for your troubles? Who wants to speak out too loudly and get silenced? Who wants to end up on a no-fly list? Do you think the people forgot the Palermo-style assassination of President Kennedy? Did you think that horrible event did not traumatize a whole generation? This is the same generation of people who you have called apathetic. Alienated is a better word. How can you call a victim apathetic? The people have been victimized by high crimes against humanity. Have you not read in your papers that Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor was afraid for her life? Have you not read what Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg said about the threats both of the Supreme Court justices have received? Why can't they have protection? Maybe the threats are from a higher source. What do you think? No doubt about it. The corruption is getting worse in this world. It acts parasitical. After it destroys everything, the people have to rebuild. How many times have we seen societies destroyed by rampant corruption in history? I'm asking you to reconsider, Dr. Nevin, when you call the people apathetic. It isn't true, and it isn't so. The people have been conditioned to be very afraid. They have been conditioned since grade school to accept. They have been told they are free. They have been told they are number one and live in the greatest country in the world. They have been programmed to respond exactly as they are responding today. I think if you would have compassion expressed for the people, it would be a first step for greater communications with your audience. We are at all different stages of our victimhood, and we all cope in the best way we can. I wrote this email to you tonight to show you some token effort that I am not apathetic. I do not vote, not because I don't care, but because I know true representation is futile. They have corrupted the voting system beyond repair. Anyone with half a brain left knows the computer source for the touch screen is not reliable. It is a feel-good exercise only. There are no choices. We have been elected. We are not apathetic. Thanks for listening. Signed, Katie. Well, you know, folks, it's a wonderful letter. I appreciate the effort Katie took in writing it, but it hasn't changed my opinion. Why not? Why wouldn't that touching email change my opinion? Because, folks, I don't believe in their concept of being a victim. I, at a personal level, am not a victim. Ever. 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 And while the author of the email had a traumatic experience in their own childhood, the simple fact of the matter is, so did everybody else. And in fact, so did I. Am I a victim? No way. Never. I reject the concept. If I, for one moment, relax that concept, I then become a victimizer of myself. I am in control. I will maintain control. And my strength and the efforts that it goes into are never futile. Never, never. This country could never have been developed with the type of attitude that says, poor me, poor me. Wrong. It's certainly a blame game. There's no question about it. The question to ask is, but how did these people get into office to begin with? How did they do it? Did they fall out of the sky? Were they forced upon us? Nope. We let it happen. It was slow. But we did it. I am 100% responsible, as is everyone else. Of course there's voter fraud. There's been voter fraud since the beginning of time. But to abdicate one's responsibility for voting and then complain about who is in power, it's a rather pointless waste of energy. I can understand a complaint if you went to the poll and voted, and you don't like a turkey that's in there because you voted for the other guy, but if you didn't vote, I'm not sure you got much room for complaint. Yes, we have a system, and it is flawed. Nothing is perfect. But do we throw out the baby bathwater? You know, folks, it's often been said that if people get what they deserve, and in my opinion, just my humble opinion, we got what we deserved because of our apathy and lack of willingness to take control. In a sense, we victimized ourselves. Is there a boogeyman? You bet there is. And it's us. Were the founding fathers victims? No way. You do not start a revolution starting out with poor me. No. Revolutions begin with a concept of I am strong, I'm in control, and by hell, these bastards ain't going to do this to me. You don't cave in. You take action. Look, the letter that was written was wonderful. It was well written. I just don't agree with the premise, that's all. We just have a difference of opinion about people. I simply do not believe in being a victim, ever. If I did believe that, I don't think I could have ever gotten through the Marine Corps. No, folks, I'm not a victim. Neither are you. Are you responsible? You bet you are. Are you apathetic? Well, simple fact is most Americans are apathetic. They're also overweight. All they're worried about is where their next hamburger is going to come from. Stop looking behind you. Stop the blame game. Blaming is not going to solve the problem, folks. I can point my finger at Washington, D.C. until hell freezes over. It's not going to change one damn thing. But getting together with other people of like mind and developing a plan to try to correct voter fraud, to try to correct a number of issues, that does work. And it's been demonstrated over and over again. Believe me, the revolution that took place between the colonies and King George did not come from people who considered themselves victims. They certainly saw King George as a victimizer, but they didn't just sit there and take it. What'd they do, folks? And they gave him the royal salute. That's what they did. Okay, enough with that one. Let me go on to the... There is a little bit of news that kind of reflects on this question of the victimizer. You may not see it right away, but let me read to you directly from the blog. This is from Truth Out. Now, the title of this is really interesting. It's called, Why Not Convict the Dog? Okay, I think originally this comes out of the Washington Post. The Washington Post reports, quote, a military dog handler who worked at the Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq was found guilty today of improperly using his dog to frighten detainees. Once again, folks, that is torture, plain and simple. The featured bad guy in this show, one 24-year-old Sergeant Michael J. Smith, was a dog handler who used his guard dog as an instrument of terror against the detainees. Smith's conviction represents, for all intents and purposes, the bottom of the barrel. The only way we could go farther down the totem pole of command would be to convict the dog. But how did Smith come to torture? Good question. Thank you. George W. Bush, Richard Cheney, and Donald Rumsfeld, as they planned their war on terror, made a decision to take the gloves off. They made an ice-cold decision to engage in torture. Next, they turned to then White House counsel, now Attorney General and former Bush personal attorney, Alberto Gonzalez, you heard me talk about him last night, he's a goofball, for a legal fig leaf that would provide them just enough cover to ignore the Geneva Conventions, international law, and U.S. law. Gonzalez complied, calling the Geneva Conventions quaint. So began the trickling down of the White House torture policy. In the interest of going as low as we can go, let's convict them. And then, by all means, do a 180-degree turn and begin working our way back up the totem pole to the decision-makers who masterminded these crimes. Listen to the last sentence, folks. Listen closely. Quote, until we do, we, too, bear responsibility. End quote. Folks, what does that mean? What is this person telling us? If you just complain and don't do anything, you have no ground to stand on. None. Take action, folks. You do bear responsibility. Cheney, Bush, Rumsfeld, did they fall out of the sky? No. They were put there by the public, the apathetic public. Okay, enough on apathy. How about rats? We got rats in Washington, D.C. Guess where else we got them? This one is strange, folks. Rats are taking over the homes in Orange County, Florida. Can you believe that? Now, some of the residents are claiming that these rats are big enough to pick a fight with a small dog. And they actually have witnesses. As a matter of fact, I actually think they have videos of the rats running along power lines, and that's how they get into the homes. My word, what can possibly be going on in Orange County, Florida? It's kind of spooky. I mean, it really is. I grew up in Newark, New Jersey. And let me tell you, folks, I'm familiar with a sewer rat. I know what a sewer rat looks like. Rats that people think they see in the rural areas, those aren't rats. Believe me, what they're calling a rat is nothing. I saw rats when I was a kid. I'm telling you, folks, the size of a small cat. I mean, these things were big and mean and hungry. Very. Be careful. I feel for you in Orange County. I don't know how you're going to deal with the problem. I remember when I was a kid, I actually got bit by a rat. Get the exterminators in there and protect your children. They're the ones who are at stake. Okay. Want to hear a crock of crap? Boy, have I got a crock of crap for you tonight, folks. And get it from. Is it from the conservative? Is it coming from Fox News? You know, the people we love to hate? No. This crock of crap is coming from Hillary Clinton. That's right, folks. Hillary Clinton, she's posturing all over the place. Boy, is she posturing. See, Hillary Clinton has a dream. And her dream is to be president of the United States. So she's posturing. You want to hear the crock of crap? You ready for this? Hillary Clinton vows to block all bills criminalizing illegal immigrants. And according to the national media, swears to it in the name of J.C., you know, Jesus Christ. In his name. Let me read this to you. Invoking political themes, Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton joined immigration advocates Wednesday to vow and block legislation seeking to criminalize undocumented immigrants. Clinton, a potential 2008 presidential candidate, and relative latecomer to the immigration debate. That's bull, folks. You're not a latecomer to that debate. Made her remarks as the Senate prepares to take up the matter next week. Clinton renewed her pledge to oppose a bill passed in December by the House that would make unlawful presence in the United States currently a civil offense, a felony. So what are we talking about here, folks? The bill is that it takes the status of being an illegal immigrant out of a simple civil offense, which is a minor issue in a courtroom, to a felony, which is a major issue. The Senate is set to consider a version of that legislation, as well as several other bills seeking to address the seemingly intractable of immigration reform. Now, you got to listen to this part, because this is where she brings in J.C. Quote, now this is from Hillary. It is certainly not in keeping with my understanding of the scriptures. Yeah, like she reads it every day, right? Clinton said, quote, because this bill would literally criminalize the Good Samaritan and probably even Jesus himself. Is this person full of crap or what? I doubt whether Hillary Clinton ever even read the Bible all the way through. But now she's doing Bible thumping. Can you believe this, folks? And you know what? You people who hate George W. Bush have the potential of voting for this idiot, Hillary Clinton, simply because she's on the other side of the aisle. I feel sorry for you. The Democrats have no more control over this country than the Republicans, and the Democratic president is not going to get us out of trouble, folks. It's your apathy you got to let go of. You get rid of your apathy, and this country will be just fine. It doesn't matter who's president. It doesn't matter who's in the legislature. If you're strong-willed, if you're willing to fight, stand up and be counted. Don't be afraid. This country will be just fine. Jeez, you know, I got to get off this damn soapbox. Anyway, hey, have you heard what happened at Walgreens? Before I read this report, I got to tell you, I really like Walgreens. Now, why do I like Walgreens? They've got the neatest little, I just got to have plastic stuff on the planet. I mean, some of the stuff in there is really, really cute. So I love going into Walgreens and seeing the different kinds of pens they have and little wood products and so on and so forth. It's kind of like a Hallmark store, except it smells better. It's got food in it. Anyway, for some reason, Walgreens has gotten involved in putting in their own computers descriptions of the people who purchased medications. Now, why would they need that? I have no idea. Let me read the next couple sentences. Less than a month after a Palm Beach woman sued Walgreens for labeling her crazy and psycho in its nationwide computer system, two more Floridians have come forward with similar allegations. A Palm Beach Gardens grandmother, 64, I don't know why they got to put the age in there, filed suit Wednesday accusing the retail chain of negligent supervision and intentional infliction of emotional distress for typing in a system, quote, watch controls, she seems shady. You know, how stupid can you get? No matter what you think about a person, it's probably not a good idea to say it to their face, and it most certainly is not a good idea to put it into a computer, into a national system. This is really dumb, folks. Walgreens, what do I fault you for? For calling something that you believe to be true? No. I'm calling you on this one for stupidity. Regardless of what you think, workers of Walgreens, don't put it in a computer. That was just stupid. Dumb, dumb, dumb. On top of that, there's no reason for it. None at all. Issues such as distrust, they're usually handled delicately and in verbal conversation. You don't put it in writing. How stupid can you get? And people who run Walgreens, you better talk to your workers. They need a little bit of supervision. Okay, around the blogs. Around the blogs. Okay, from the All Spin Zone. I love this particular blog. Why? It's probably one blog on the net that goes right for the juggler. So I'll get right to it. Now, this is a slurring towards, not by, but towards Condi Rice. Quote, so a conservative talk show host in St. Louis got canned yesterday. He was talking about the rumor that Condi Rice might be named to replace Paul Tagliabue as commissioner of the NFL. Now, all of us sports fans have heard the rumor. In fact, it is a long shot. Condi is the closest thing the Bushies have to competence because she's the only one in that crew that even looks competent. I got to agree with that, folks. She's a very bright lady. I mean, I've heard her speak. This lady is very sharp. Back to the blog. To top that off, she's the only one in the Bush administration that makes it look somewhat diverse. Yeah, in other words, they don't all have that same white groomed look as if they just came off the streets of a Midwestern town in Nebraska. Maybe it was too diverse for conservative talk show host David Lehan, who actually referred to Condi on air as a, quote, coon. Can you believe that? Can you believe that? This jerk has this coming out of his mouth? But this happened on national radio, folks. The guy is definitely a conservative. Now check out the whiny excuses. Reached at his home Wednesday, Lehan apologized again, saying he meant to use the word coon. What another pile of crap. First we get crap from Hillary Clinton, and now we get it from this jerk on national radio. So, we got it from the left, and we get it now from the right. So, where is it at, folks? Who do you trust? Is it the Democrats, the Republicans, the liberals, the conservatives? Who's going to bail you out? No one. No one. They're all going to come after you at some point. If you don't pick yourself up by your own bootstraps, you're going down the tubes. The whole country will go down unless we do something about it. A person like Lenihan, is much easier to deal with than someone like Hillary. He's a talk show host. I mean, he could be shut down immediately. And I do hope they shut him down. He needs to be off the air. And I would like to see a letter of apology in one of the national newspapers to Condi Rice from this jerk, but we'll never get it. If not that, at least from the producers of his show. Shame on you, David Lenihan, shame on you. Hey, the Kofax words, do you know what they are? Nah, you don't know what they are. You're sitting there listening and you're hearing Nevin say, Kofax Awards, what is that, a baseball player? No, I'm not talking about a baseball player. But you know what, it does pertain to the baseball player. Look it up. Kofax Awards actually do pertain to him. The 2005 Kofax Awards, finalist, best blog. Now, I'm talking about non-sponsored blogs, folks. Top of the line, top of the list, number one, all-time 2005 Kofax Award winner is Brad Blog. And it is a cool blog. It really is. However, I think it looks like hell. I really do. Every time I go to Brad Blog, I have a hard time finding anything. First of all, there's too much red on the page. And then there's all this blinking yellow stuff coming at you. I mean, you have to search around and find stuff. Where do I suggest to go look? Boy, TNT Radio. That's where to go. Second one on the list, Carpetbagger Report. I'm not as familiar with that as Brad Blog. Crooks and Liars. Whoa, that's number three. And I'll tell you what, folks. That is one hell of a blog. I mean, as a matter of fact, I think I have a report in tonight's news. Oh, my word, it's 6:44. I'm already getting to the news. You know, Nevin's got to do something about this flapping lip. Okay. From Brad Blog, can we make it? There's a meltdown going in Chicago. Guess what? In Cook County. Oh, am I surprised? Cook County? Meltdown on what? Voting! The voting machines are toast in Cook County. A lot of it has to do with what happened to the training of judges who were supposed to be involved in all of this. Well, apparently, the judges didn't go to the training. A lot of them just kind of like ignored it, and all hell broke loose. Anyway, quote, Landon Neal, chairman of the Chicago Board of Election Commissioners, further said that 4,000 of Chicago's 14,000 election judges attended no training and instead relied on a judge's manual that was sent in the mail and was written in a complicated and confusing manner. How come I'm not getting a warning? I should be off the air. I am. Good night, folks. I love you all.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.